You're listening to a podcast by BI Norwegian Business School.
Welcome back to Stay Ahead, a BI Norwegian Business School podcast. This episode is part of Strategy as Practice series, where practice meets theory and theory meets practice. Today's topic is managing challenges and opportunities of being a global company. Today, I have the pleasure of having with me Sigve Brekke, who has been the president and CEO of Telenor Group for almost 7 years. He previously held various leadership positions across Telenor, most of the time in Asia, and heading up the region for 7 years before he took on his present CEO role. Sigve has also been state secretary at the Minister of Defense back in 1993 to 96. Welcome, Sigve.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.
I'm also joined by Professor Birgitte Grøgaard, professor at the Department of Strategy and Entrepreneurship at BI Norwegian Business School. Her research areas include international strategy and multinational corporations and headquarter subsidiary relationships. She also had a practical experience before she took her PhD within Statoil and in the consultancy world. She also took work as an assistant and associate professor at Haskane School of Business, University of Calgary, back in 2007 to 2016. Welcome. My name is Thomas Borgen, and I'm an industrial PhD candidate at the Department of Strategy and Entrepreneurship here at BI, and will be your host today. Sigve, you spent some 15 years in various leadership roles in Asia. Asia culture is different. How did you adapt your leadership style? What have you taken with you now as the CEO of Telenor, which operates both in the Nordics and in Asia?
Well, good question, Thomas. So many learnings. And you know, one mistake many people in this part of the world do is to think about Asia, as one Asia. Asia is so different. I have been working in Thailand, in Singapore, in India. I've been chairman of companies in Bangladesh, in Pakistan. And the differences between these countries and the cultures are, they're so different. But then to answer your question, I think I took with me three important lessons. One, it's the importance of purpose and the importance of being clear on what are you trying to do as a company. And in Asia, we often talked about empowering societies, that what we do is more than just selling SIM cards. We want to be a part of growing these societies, changing the societies, raising standards. And with that, we use this as a way to both do our stakeholder management, also talking to governments and all that, but also to our customers and our employees. So that's one. The second one, it's the importance and power of culture, to build culture across. And that is probably one of the, if not the most important thing, I think, if you want to globalize yourself, if you want to be a global company, to build a culture that covers all the different cultures, a company culture. And we spent quite some time on that, actually. And we saw that the culture as one of the main competitive advantages we actually had. Just because we worked differently, we were seen as different, we were able to do things different from others. And the third part, it's leadership. And what I mean by that is that all businesses, if you take away the money, the technology, the marketing and all that, it comes down to people and the ability you have to actually recruit, develop, maintain your leaders. And I think being then in charge of several companies in Asia, I think that is what I'm spending most time on, to make sure that I have the right people on board and that I develop the right people and that I'm able actually to take the very best out of people's capabilities. So those are the three areas. And all these three areas, I think you can read about in any management books. But the practice, when it comes to this, it's very different.
And I think we all agree there is sometimes a big leap from theory to practice.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I very much acknowledge that Asia is so, let's say, combined of many different cultures. Like when somebody says Nordics is one culture, you know, we know Sweden, Norway, Denmark, Finland is very different.
And but still, quite limited differences compared with some of the Asian countries.
You're probably very right in that sense. And let's speak more about that later when we talk about what you global and what you do local. Birgitte, now an esteemed professor. But prior to your PhD, you actually were a consultant, means you actually had some real experience. You know, at university, we educate students so they get ready for the job market. And some of them also come back once in a while to enhance their knowledge further, for example, through an executive MBA or master. And this podcast is an example of the interaction between leading business leaders and leading academics to exchange views. But are academic faculty active enough interacting with the business community on an ongoing basis?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. And I recognize that from having conversations with our executive students that they often have a clear distinction between theory and practice. And I think it's easy to forget that when we develop theory, we develop it based on data from practice. So we're gathering data and that might be inductively. So we go out and talk to managers. We might be collecting interviews or observing processes that go on in businesses. And then we try to from that theorize and see what can we learn from this. Or the opposite, that we think about something more abstract or theoretically, and then we go out and we collect data from firms, from industry, from countries, from individual decision makers, and we test our hypotheses on this type of data. So from my perspective, it's not really that distinct. And to develop theory, you need to interact with business. But that being said, I think as academics, we need to be better at communicating managerial practices and sort of this so what question of what we're looking at, because we're so trained into thinking the rigor of what we're doing in terms of doing research and to only speak about things that you can support with your data, that we tend to maybe be too careful in terms of going that extra step and talking about what could this possibly mean for managers out there and what would that mean for trying to implement what we're talking about in a business context. So I absolutely see that we have a ways to go as academics, but I still see that that distinction isn't so clear cut as I think many people assume that it is in the outset.
I think it's interesting. I don't know what you think, Sigrid, but my experience from business is we need to be fairly right because we don't have all the facts. But in academia, they need to know everything before they can really be prescriptive. And what's your reflection on using academia and academia's role in business as ongoing?
No, I think that's very valuable. I think that most businesses will use the main concepts from academia and trying to use it and to deploy it in practice. So I think there are some very useful principles that you can that you get from management books. But then it's actually come down to what I will call your adaptability. That your ability to adapt some theoretical concepts into practice. And going back to your question on different cultures, it is possible to build culture across different national cultures. It is possible to develop leaders which have very different background. It is possible to use same concepts if you have the ability to adapt it to local realities. And that adaptability, I think, is probably the most important lesson from my career, but also from working in a global setting. Because this is not about doing the same thing in every setting. This is not about centralization. This is not about trying to roll out one-size-fit-all model. but it is about taking concepts into different cultural settings and trying to use it in that way.
Basically, I think what we say in academia, you have to contextualize it and adjust it accordingly to the context.
And this is so much more difficult today than it was 10 years ago. And what I call adaptable leadership is becoming probably the most important part of being a leader. Your ability to actually adapt, your ability to work agile, your ability to change when you see that partnerships are changing, competitors are changing, environments are changing, stakeholders are changing. And this goes so much faster today than it did just a few years ago.
And if I can add to that, I think what you're speaking to there is also maybe what we as academics can find challenging because we are speaking often about theory that's transferable from one context to another, or concepts that you can use. But then bringing that into the specific context that a particular business or industry might be concerned about, that's where I also see the role of consultants as really important, as the translators and bridge builders between that.
Exactly.
Because we're often very careful to say this is always the case, and we try to look at the boundary conditions and when that might differ not necessarily apply in a certain context. Mm. So I find that to be challenging as an academic, actually, to how far do we go into that dialogue with specific businesses, with specific industries, when our theory is developed to also be transferable and generalizable across contexts.
No, I agree to that. Yeah.
Very good. But we are deep into today's topic, and let's dwell further on it. And the company today is, of course, where you are the CEO of Telenor. You are a leading telecommunication company across the Nordics and Asia, with now more than 170 million subscribers. I believe you are one of the 15th biggest telecom companies in the world. Mm. Some 15,000 employees and a turnover of more than 110 billion. What we call a sizable company. But before we go further on Telenor, Sigrid, it's interesting to listen to Birgitte. And what does research say? How MNEs, in other words, multinational enterprises, should find the balance between what we call global integration and local responsiveness.
It's a really fascinating area that's been researched for decades, and there's no one right answer necessarily. But I think one of the things that's really developed over the years is this recognition that you really need to manage your multinational in a differentiated way. And I think you were speaking to that earlier also, that you need to recognize that the needs will be different in different parts of the organization, and avoid trying to manage all the units in a uniform way, or have expectations of integration or responsiveness that's similar across. So that's one aspect that I think is commonly accepted these days. And then this idea of, you know, being aware that you might need local adaptiveness is not the same as being able to implement it, as you were getting at also. So we have a lot of emphasis on why you would need to be locally adaptive, and we need a lot more research on how you actually achieve it. And one of the areas that is recognized through many studies is this the importance of history and the organizational impediments, that you really need to cater the way that you adapt and how you move forward to your own organization, where you come from, and what's important in that particular context that you're in. And then finally, as the last point to this, doing the as much as possible both is not the optimal way to go. So doing as much integration as you possibly can, or as much local responsiveness, just creates a complexity and lack of transparency in terms of roles and responsibilities and the communication within the organization that makes it really difficult. So really think strategically about where would we need to be locally responsive and why, and how should we go about that?
Can I comment on that?
Yeah, because do you recognize what she's saying?
Yeah, absolutely. And trying to, I agree to everything you said, and then trying to make this into what it concretely means for us. Mm. And going a little bit back to your first question, Thomas. What I think a global company need to do, you have to have a common purpose. And I cannot emphasize enough how important that is. It's regardless of where you operate or the local conditions. A common purpose where all your employees believes and understands. In Telenor, it's connecting you to what matter most, empowering societies. So it says something connecting you, says something about the business we are in, and empowering societies says something about what you want to be in the societies where you operate. The second thing that needs to be common, it's a culture. And it is possible to develop a common culture, again, across different nationalities. We have four behaviors which are almost holy for us. It is always explore, meaning the curiosity, the entrepreneurial thinking. It is create together, which means that teamwork first before individuals. The third one is keep promises, which means that you do what you say and you deliver what you promise. And the last one, which is actually very important, at least in the Asian part of the world, is be respectful. It means, and this is something we take with us from Norway, that there is no difference between me as a group CEO and the one that is working out in the market. We are respectful to each other. They are respectful when it comes to different levels in the organization, different culture, different religions, and so on and so forth. So this is important that you spend time on this. And the third part, it's leadership. What we do in Telenor is that, and as I said, I'm spending a lot of time on this myself, the top 125-30 leaders in Telenor, those are the ones in the management team of our 8 business units in 8 different markets. And the ones in my group executive management team. Those are 125. I am developing that myself. If you want to get into that top leadership team, it has to go through me. So I will then look at, how does the candidate score in relation to the four behaviors that I just mentioned? Then all those people in that top 125, they will be on three to five years contracts. After 3 to 5 years, you have to move around. And then we are moving you around in different geographies, in different responsibilities, because this is so important for us to grow the leaders, but also to take best practices from one part to another part. This is not for everyone. We have leaders that say that, no, I want to do exactly what I know best, and I want to stay exactly where I am. Well, then you are not in the top 125 leadership team. And the last point is that, pointing to what you said, you need to figure out what do you want to globalize. And I'm not talking about centralize. Centralize is a bad word. Centralize means that there are certain things you want to do in the headquarter. Globalize is what you want to do across. But you can do it with people in different geographies. You can do it developing expert teams, and you just work in a global setting. What do you want to globalize? What do you want to standardize? There are certain things that there is no questions around. And what do you want to localize? If you are clear on this, then I think you have a good business model. And for us, of course, everything that has to do with marketing and sales and all that, that's localized. Technology is more and more standardized. Globalized is, for example, what I said about culture. So you need to be specific on these three different things. And if you do that, then I think you can have a global model.
And it sounds like a very fascinating, well thought through strategy, how you move people around, how you kind of are very clear on globalization. Another word for standardization is harmonization. That's a very positive world. And then you talk about what's localized. But what has the challenges been in executing this in practice? What can we as listeners take with us, which you have learned in this journey?
There are several challenges. One challenge is that how do you avoid too much matrix way of working and then confusing decision processes? That's one challenge. Another challenge is how do you deal with bureaucracy when you are working so across different type of settings? And also, how do you make sure that what is not local is actually adding value? Most of the local businesses will probably think that I know best the way I want to do it. So how do you add value then with having to deal with something, a function that is sitting in a very different location? Those are the challenges. And of course, on top of that, there are challenges with developing this global leadership. It is, because it basically means that if you want to get to the top in one of our companies, you have to have experience from other markets, from other type of professions. You can just go one way. And it's not for everyone. And I see this is becoming more and more challenging, to be honest. When I moved out to Asia a long time ago, I had an entrepreneurial and an adventure type of spirit. It's harder to do that today. And if I think about the last two years in COVID, I'm just afraid that it's going to be harder and harder to have this mobility, which I think is so important if you want to develop a global business.
What's your reflection on this, Birgitte? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think what Sigve's talking about is really interesting. It resonates a lot with what we've been seeing in research also, and that it's often a combination of having more formal ways of trying to integrate certain parts of the organization combined with more of a socialization type of moving people around, having arenas to interact and to speak. And I think one of the areas that you're pointing to in terms of one of the biggest challenges that we can see when we're doing research in this area is that decision of what should you be integrating, what do you have to have locally, and how do you actually make that decision, and who do you bring into that conversation to make those decisions? So to what extent, how do you in Telenor actually discuss with your managers out there in the organization in terms of what creates value for them locally and how to create win-win situations throughout the organization. I'm curious to hear how you actually do that, because of course sitting at home or in headquarters, you might not be aware of certain needs or certain pressures that they have locally.
Well, a couple of answers to that, I think. First of all, I believe in a distributed headquarter, meaning that, and that's what I mean by globalization. So you have global functions distributed out, such that you are actually sitting, even in global function, you are sitting quite close to the actual market realities. Secondly, what we are working on now, and this is also coming out, I will say, from the COVID to last years, when you have more flexible way of working. We now see that leadership is changing. We are now implementing something we call a tight, loose, tight concept. And we have tried to do that over years, but now we are even more specific on it, which means that you have to be tight on setting the direction and setting what you want to achieve. That is a top leadership role. Then you are loose on the way you implement this. So you are really empowering your people out in the field in the way you are actually working to meet that overall tight objective. But then you have to be tight again in the follow-up. And if you do that, I think you will find a good balance between how you set overall directions, but also how you allow empowerment and adaptability in how you implement that in practice. And then it's a little bit back to that adaptable leadership, to trying to be the ability to adjust as you go. And the days are gone where a leader can sit in an office and read reports. You need to be on the ground. I'm traveling a lot myself, and so will the rest of the top leaders in Telenor do, to just try to adjust and learn and see what works and what doesn't work. But it's not a simple theoretical model to solve this. It is the ability to do this in practice.
If I can add, yeah, I think it's really interesting that last tight, sort of the tight, loose, tight.
Yeah.
Because when you look at studies that I have seen companies that they give a direction, but they give a lot of freedom that is voluntary, it's often very difficult to implement. So that aspect of tightness, whether that's through output control in terms of looking at results and seeing what's being achieved or not, I think it's a really important measure that you're bringing in.
A lot of companies are either tight, tight, tight. Mm-hmm. So it's so kind of controlled, everything you do, or it's loose, loose, loose. So you need to find that combination. And if you're able to do that, a lot of creativity is coming out of that, but also creativity that is coming out of a clear direction.
But going back to your point about you enjoy
and you guide and you get inspiration by traveling around. We've been through two years of lockdown. How have you adapted your leadership as a consequence of that during or maybe also after the pandemic?
Well, first of all, I have actually been traveling even the last 2 years. So I think I have 9 weeks in hotel quarantine around the world because I just found that that is necessary. But to answer your question, no, we have tried then to be clear on what I just said. And if you are clear on the first tight, then actually you can let people loose in implementation. And you don't have to be that closely following all the activities. And I think whatever companies, even those that are operating in only one market, will see coming out of the pandemic, it's a flexible work style where people are not going to come to office all the time. And that is a big leadership challenge, because you cannot be a leader and are used to sitting in a room with all your reports and talking about what to do every morning. You have to be able to let loose. And this is not for everyone. But the companies that are able to do that will be able to take that, inspiration out of letting things loose in a different way. And then for me, this is very much about staying focused on developing that culture and constantly focus on the importance of behaviors and how people are getting together. I have spent a lot of time with Zooms or with the video conferencing equipment just to stay in touch, even though you cannot do it physically.
Exactly. You also mentioned that one of the challenges is that the danger of bureaucracy. And I think if you have size, if you have scale, that often creeps in. And that correlates sometimes with slower processes. I mean, in a fast-changing environment, which you're working in, how do you make sure that, on one hand, you have certain processes which needs to be very structured, another process which needs to be much more agile?
This is a very good question. And actually, this becomes more and more difficult because the expectations to companies now, it's much more reporting than it used to be. For example, you have to report on what you do on human rights. You have to report now on diversity. You have to report on climate reduction. Also, there are so many things that adds to that bureaucracy. But to answer your question, you have to be very, very clear, I think, on how always asking a question, can this be simplified? Can this actually be stopped? Because what many companies do, Telenor included, is that you add things to what's already there. So what we are trying to do, it's once a year, actually, we go through and look at, are there things we can stop? Are there things that can be done differently? Are there things that can be simplified? Are there things that can be dealt with by someone else? And this is just a constant journey. There is no simple tool to be used there, because you cannot just let loose either. Because as leaders, you are a bit held responsible for what is happening out in a very far away type of market. So the combination of all this, you just need to be very aware of it.
I think that's a really interesting point. And this aspect of, we talk about, sensing new opportunities and acting on those, and we tend to forget to talk about what not to do anymore. And the more you add on in terms of responsibilities and activities, the less you can transfer the knowledge that you want to transfer, because people don't have the room for it or the resources and the time or the motivation to spend time focusing on those things. So I think this aspect of de-learning what you've done that doesn't add value anymore is almost a forgotten area in a lot of what we focus on in research.
Stop doing things is the most important thing, actually, when you do strategy processes. Okay. Not what you are adding, but what you are stopping to do.
But I think we're moving into what Birgitte alluded to is how to transfer knowledge, capabilities, And being global, how do you do that in practice between the Asian country, between the Nordic countries, and not the least between those two continents? How do you do that?
three things, I think. The first one is what I said. We are rotating leaders, and that in itself is the best way of transferring knowledge. You take with you what you learned from one position in one market to another market. The second part is that we believe in lifting all our employees in terms of knowledge. So some few years ago, I started something we called the 40 hours challenge, which means that every single of our 16,000 employees need to take at least 40 hours during their working hours, also during a year, to learn something new. And we have then given them digital tools with learnings that are both general, for example, how to work with this, what does strategic leadership means, but also more going into deep, what is the power of AI, for example, artificial intelligence. And what we also have seen is that if you can provide them with world-class digital courses, and they need also to get a certificate that you can use, then we see that this is a way for us to lift everyone. Then we do take around 4,000 or 5,000 of our people into much deeper specialist education. That is also happening then partly through physical, also classroom education, but mostly digital. So that's the other part, that you basically make sure that everyone knows what the main knowledge you need to have in the future. And then I will say that the third part is that you systematically do benchmarking. Benchmarking between different business units. And so systematically then create these networks, knowledge networks. And we do that with all leaders in different markets that they meet, they discuss, they learn, and they take best practices. So the best practices learning, it's a way to, and to create a little bit competition here. Why did he do that? And I didn't think about it. Why are they doing so much better in this area than we did ourselves? So those are the three things that we are trying to do systematically.
Here, Birgit, here's a business opportunity to educate the rest of the Norwegian businesses about some of the ideas which Telenor has put in place.
It's really interesting to hear you talk about how systematically you work with this, because if we look at what common challenges have been with knowledge transfer, you could say that some is related to the source of the knowledge. Is the source motivated to share? Does the source have the credibility? And then you have on the recipient side, we often talk about the absorptive capacity. Mm. Does the person have the language? Does the person have the basic skills? Does the person have other knowledge to relate it to? And I think what you're speaking to in terms of focusing on both developing an organizational culture for learning and also in terms of allowing individuals in the organization to continue to learn and educate themselves is really very interesting and powerful ways to try to speak to those typical challenges that you find. And then in addition to those two aspects, we often talk about the context. You know, is there room for emphasizing the learning aspects in the organization? And, you know, how do you develop, how are the relationships between the source and the recipients and these arenas that you're creating with sharing knowledge and sharing best practices really help to develop also the context.
And I'm 100% convinced that this is going to be more important going forward. Mm. And I think that the future employee of any global businesses would be employee that would require development and learning. And if you don't feel that the company has that, doesn't matter how much you pay, doesn't matter what the type of title you get. So the ability to create a learning organization, I think it's super important. Mm.
I fully agree. And I think also looking at studies that have talked about these organizations that try to do both the global integration and the local responsiveness, the organizational learning on a worldwide perspective is at the core of that, at succeeding with that. Yeah.
And just to continue on that, you are delivering connectivity today, world-class, some would say. And I presume it may be also the core going forward. But I'm very clear also reading that you want to move beyond that And I assume that we require different capabilities. So how are you, is this a part of building those capabilities?
Yeah, that's a very good question. On the one hand, we are in a fantastic business, also connectivity business, which is basically that we provide networks for people to use digital services or digital products. And going forward, you will see that this is going to explode further into everything being connected, not only everything, not everyone, but also everything. So we are in the midst of that digital, I will call it digital revolution. We have just seen the first start of what's going to happen here. And I call it the perfect storm when 5G connectivity, which is different from 4G, comes together with artificial intelligence and IoT, also everything being connected. That is going to create a very, very different way of producing goods and services than we know it today. So yes, we are in a beautiful growth business. But to your question, you have a choice. This could be the only thing you do. And then become a kind of utility company. So you provide connectivity for everyone else to use. Or you try to move beyond that. And we want to try to take a position on product and services on top of the connectivity. And there are certain products and services which are close to our core. And I think one mistake that many companies do is that they move too far out there into areas where they do not have any natural reason to win because they don't have the competencies. So you have to find those areas which are closer to core. And for us, for example, to pick two examples of that, it's security. Our ability to secure networks, to secure our customers for all the attacks we now see coming out of everything being connected. Another area would be then to develop platforms to do not only connectivity, but also do analysis. So, and the third area would be then to help to automate businesses and public sector. For example, 5G comes with also the ability to build connectivity as a service. We are already building private networks to just tailor-make that to the customer's needs. So that's what is under what we call it beyond connectivity. The problem with that is that now we are not competing with other telecom players. Now we are competing with the global hyperscalers, the global platform companies. And that's why scale is important for us. We are quite small. We have only 172 million customers in only 8 markets. But you need that scale to create interest from those big guys. I've been working now together with the team for the last 1.5 years to actually negotiate as what we call strategic partnership contract with Google Cloud, with Amazon Web Services, and we're also with Cisco, just to see how can we in the future actually form partnerships. And partnerships, it means that you are willing to share the gain that you are actually working together to create new products and services. I think that in a digital world, you will see more and more and more of these partnerships. Innovation is going to come from partnerships, not from in-house research and innovation centers. It's in the partnership. A lot of the revenue and the growth is coming from partnership, not only from what you do yourself. But this is very difficult when you have a kind of old business, because it does require you to change your operating model and the way you're running your business.
Interesting enough, I think your company was established in 1850s.
Yeah.
So you have been able to adapt at least 150 years quite well.
We have, but the change is that now it's a global competition.
Exactly.
Back then it was a local competition. And things are going so enormous much faster than it did before.
That's a very good point. What's your reflection on this, Birgitta?
No, it's interesting, and it makes me think of the focus that we have within research on recombination. So this ability to take what you're good at and recombine it with whether it's a partner with complementary advantages and make it into something different that creates value for your customers. And we often talk about that as the highest order of advantages that a firm can have, this ability to recombine. And I think when you're mentioning these new types of partners, one thing that might be important to consider is we sometimes refer to it as alliance-specific advantages, that it's something that creates value when you're in the alliance, but not when you're outside of it. So in that sense, you can work with companies that don't become your competitor the next day. Yeah.
And these companies, you will see partnerships where you have to deal with both partners and competitors at the same time. And this is actually a topic for the academia to figure out what does it mean actually to form these strategic partnerships? What does that mean for established companies like ourselves? Partnerships for startups is relatively simple because you start from zero. Partnership for established business is very difficult to do in practice.
And I guess to some extent, you see some of that in the oil and gas industry where they have over many years been both collaborators and partners and also competitors.
And in the financial services, where we actually do the infrastructure, at least in the Nordics, very similar, and we compete on being the aggregator. So it's some of the similar topics, actually. But being in Asia, and I think now in four markets in Asia and four in the Nordics, and I read some statistics in your annual report where you where you said that in 2018, we had about 7 billion connected devices. And by 2025, you expect it to be 75 billion worldwide. I mean, we're talking about exponential growth every second year, basically. And Asia took, let's call it a step into mobile space much faster than we did up here. Do you see more harmonization taking place now? Or are we still going in different speeds in the Nordics versus Asia to generalize?
You are going to go in different speeds. Asia is still going to leapfrog some of the time leapfrog than what we have seen in this part of the world. But at the same time, technology in itself is going to end up with more harmonization. Because technology in itself, platform technology in itself, is global. And you will see then more standardized solutions in technology than what you may have seen in the past.
Would that, for example, mean that 5G will be the standard in all markets going forward?
Yeah, it will take, of course, Asia or the emerging part of the world is going to take more step by step into 5G. The Nordic markets are going to be in forefront. But those step-by-steps are going to go faster than it has happened in this part of the world. And again, what Telenor did 20 years ago was to take what we knew from Norway into emerging markets. And we're going to do it again. Norway and the Nordics are going to be our innovation center on 5G and new technology. And then we are going to take that with us to the more emerging markets. But the differences is going to be smaller and smaller over time.
I am curious if I could ask, so you have these markets where, you know, there are great distances economically and the infrastructure in place and so forth. What would be some examples of knowledge experience that you've developed in those markets that you bring with you to, say, the Nordic markets or other markets that might be, defined as sort of advanced markets?
Oh, that's a very good question. It would be speed. Some of these markets, they have an even tougher competition than we have in Norway. So you need to adapt much faster. It could be challenging the business models because the what you get from your customers is much, much lower revenues than you get from a customer in this part of the world. So you have to work with very different cost models and operating models. And it could also be that the digital ecosystems in Asia are now being developed. So there could be products and services that you also can bring you back to the Nordics.
When you now have entered into mergers in Malaysia and Thailand to build even stronger units, you will not have full control. Does that complicate the way of unifying one Telenor?
Yes and no. Yes, in the sense that our business model in the in the last couple of decades has been that we have been in control. We have done things the way we want to do things. But bear in mind that three of the Asian companies has also been listed companies. So we have not had 100%. We have to deal with partners. So yes, but on the other hand, this is what I said about partnerships. Now we need to find models to create value out of partnerships, where you cannot just do it one way or so your way. You need to find those value creative models. And I think that's going to be useful for us, even in Norway or Sweden or Denmark, Finland, where we have 100% control.
Time is running. I think we've been tight on the agenda. We have been loose on the conversation and had to be tight on time. Yeah. It's been very good. I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation, and I think we could have gone for a long time, Sigve and Birgitte. But I think we have to cut it here. And hopefully we could have you back because a follow-up on how you are able to take that position as moving up what I will call the value chain from being just, which is important in itself, the connectivity, the barrier of connectivity to up there. That would be very interesting. And you kind of also threw out a couple of challenges for Birgitte to pick up, and we're very happy with that. But very happy to have you here. But I have one final question. Since we're sitting here at BI, and a lot of our students actually will like to work for Telenor, any ideas how we should adjust or improve our education, or differently, any advice to the students how they should approach you if they are interested?
Wow. You are more than welcome to approach us. We have summer internship programs, for example. That's an entry into Telenor. But if you wanna come in there, and if you wanna make a career in Telenor, you have to also be willing to do two things, which I think young people really should look at. One, it's to get abroad, get out, and get some cultural experiences. And two, try different things. When you are relatively early in your career, try to build a platform of knowledge in several areas. If you're willing to do those two things, you are welcome to Telenor, and I think that's the best career advice I also have.
I think with those words, we'll say thank you very much to both of you, and I hope your listener enjoyed this episode.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was such a pleasure to be part of.
This is a BI production. Listen to more podcasts. Go to bi.no/podcasts.